Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code Packaday to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. It is Championship Sunday, Buffalo, KC, Philly, Washington. This is going to be a fun day. While we're on the subject of having fun, let's spice things up a little bit, have a little bit more fun with Prize Picks as we get our last Sunday of football before the Super Bowl on this Championship Sunday. Let's make it an epic day of winning. But before you get your selections in, just remember that you can download the Prize Picks app and use code Packaday to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. Here are my picks for Championship Sunday. Number one, Patrick Mahomes, more than 17 penalties that go in his favor. Okay. Unfortunately, that is not actually an option. If it were, I think I would go fewer than 17 penalties in his favor, but it would be a tough call. All right, in all seriousness, Jaden Daniels, more than one half passing yard. That is actually a real one. Jaden Daniels, more than one half passing yard. If he gets one passing yard, you're going to win that one. So make sure to get that one in. That is a promotion that they are running on Sunday. Josh Allen, more than one half passing touchdown. This one goes without saying. I do believe Josh Allen will throw at least a touchdown in this game. Jalen Hurts, same thing. More than one half passing touchdown. Going with that one as well. They're low hanging fruit maybe, but I'm going with both of them and I'm going to get that payout. Jake Elliott, more than 1.5 field goals made. Now this is a little bit more dicey, right? Jake Elliott has been a little bit shaky as of late. I think he's going to get it together. I do think Washington will be able to do a little bit of bend but don't break. Philly's offense isn't exactly running on all cylinders right now, which does lead me to believe that they're going to have to settle for some field goals. If Elliott can make them, I feel really good about this one. So in totality, the four that I'm going with, Jaden Daniels, more than one half passing yard. Josh Allen, more than one half passing touchdown. Jalen Hurts, more than one half passing touchdowns. And Jake Elliott, more than 1.5 field goals made. As always, there are a plethora of amazing options out there for this week's slate of games, and I'm sure there's going to be even more when it comes to Super Bowl Sunday. And as mentioned, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive that $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Packaday Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Championship Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Packaday Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. You're the absolute best for being here. Thank you so much for making Packaday part of your daily routine. We have a new episode 365 days a year. So make sure to like and subscribe. And of course, get those little notifications so that you are notified every single time one of those new episodes come out. We've got a lot to go over today. We're going to talk about some Packers news in just a second here. As I mentioned, we'll go over the championship games. And our main topic for today is going to be Rasul Douglas. We're going to look a little bit back at that trade that took place a couple years ago. But primarily, our discussion today is going to be based upon whether or not the Packers should bring Rasul Douglas back and make him a key part of this cornerback room and secondary moving forward. We'll get to all of that today. I want to start with that key piece of Packers news from Saturday, and that is that Packers offensive coordinator Adam Stenovich has completed an interview with the Seattle Seahawks for their open offensive coordinator position. Now, you may or may not be aware that in order to go from one team to another in a like-for-like position, so in this case, offensive coordinator to offensive coordinator, you do need permission to do so from the organization and from the head coach to be able to interview in another spot. In this case, it does make some sense, and there is some precedence for this. Adam Stenovich, as you likely know, is not the play caller in Green Bay. Matt LaFleur is. So Steno is the offensive coordinator, but he does not get to call plays. It is not, quote unquote, his offense. It is Matt's offense, and Matt is the play caller. In Seattle, remember, they have a defensive head coach, and the offensive coordinator there is going to be tasked with building the entire offense, putting together the playbook, and calling the plays. It is their offense. So there is an advantage in those situations. It's basically a promotion to go from an offensive coordinator job without play calling duties and it not being your offense to a position where you're basically the head coach of the offense, right? You're completely in charge of it. There's some oversight from the coach, but it's your baby. So there would be a basically a promotion there for Steno, but it doesn't have to be that way, meaning from an NFL standpoint, you do still need permission from the club in order to interview in those instances. And in this case, it does seem that Matt LaFleur gave that permission, and understandably so. Matt would know better than anyone what that can do for a career. If you remember, he was with the Rams with Sean McVay, and it was Sean McVay's offense, and it was Sean McVay calling the plays, and Matt LaFleur was offensive coordinator at that time. And then what happened? Tennessee Titans job opens up, and it's Mike Vrabel, defensive-minded coach, that's the head coach, and he gets to go to Tennessee and build the offense and call the plays and do everything there. He got a like-for-like job going from offensive coordinator to offensive coordinator, but was able to call the plays there, and that led to him getting the job in Green Bay as head coach. So Matt LaFleur, of all people, understands what that boost can do for a career. And in this case, it seems like he is willing to let Steno out of his contract in Green Bay if he would get a job somewhere else where he would get to call the plays. What I would assume is if Chicago came calling and said, hey, we want Adam Stanovich as our offensive coordinator, can we interview him? He would say no, because Ben Johnson is the offensive mind and the play caller there. And if you wanted Adam Stanovich, you would have needed to hire him as the head coach. Now it's a like-for-like position completely, and we're going to block that and say, no, he cannot interview in Chicago. He is in the same spot here in Green Bay. There would be no reason to do so. But in Seattle, where it's a defensive-minded coach and Steno can build his offense, it does make sense. It's not uncommon. It's not unheard of. And we'll see if Steno actually gets that job. It seems like there's already been a handful of offensive minds that have interviewed for that position in Seattle. I don't believe Steno is going to be one of the primary favorites for that role, but I don't think it's impossible either. I mean, he got a head coaching interview in Chicago. I know it was a pretty wide net, but you know, there are a lot of people, and including Matt, that think very highly of Adam Stanovich and would love to get him in their organization in some capacity. Whether or not he's ready to build an offense and call plays, your guess is as good as mine on that. And I think, honestly, my guess is probably as good as the Seattle Seahawks. Until you actually go out and do that, you have to kind of prove yourself, right? But he got an interview. We'll see if he gets the job. If he would get the job in Seattle or with some other organization that is willing to give him the play calling duties, in that situation, Green Bay would have some options. You know, Luke Getsy, we just heard from Rob Domofsky, is going to be coming back to Green Bay. He's got that offensive coordinator experience and was one of the key pieces that they wanted, or at least one of the options at offensive coordinator when Hackett left. He ends up going to Chicago because he could call the plays there. It seemed like Getsy was kind of the favorite, but he would not have called the plays in Green Bay. So he goes to Chicago, and then Green Bay gets Adam Stanovich as their offensive coordinator, not calling the plays. But they thought highly of Getsy at that time, so it could be that he's the offensive coordinator here. Bobby Slowick is out there. There's a variety of really smart offensive minds that could be available for Green Bay. So we'd have to take that one step at a time, see who they might interview, and go through it. But Getsy would be a potential name. Bobby Slowick would be a potential name as well that could be in mind for Matt LaFleur if that spot does open. But we will cross that bridge when it gets to it. If I were a betting person today, my guess would be that Steno will be back as the offensive coordinator. But certainly good luck to him on his interviews with Seattle. We'll see if he gets it. And if he does, we'll certainly talk about some potential replacement options at that point in time. As I mentioned, it is, of course, Championship Sunday. We've got Bills, Chiefs, Commanders, Eagles. Here's the thing. I'm not going to be able to add anything super exciting from a matchups or breakdown standpoint. I did watch some Rasul Douglas Buffalo Bills tape, so I have a little bit of Bills tape experience recently. But outside of that, I haven't gone and done a deep dive into Chiefs or Bills or Commanders. Obviously, we saw the Eagles go up against Green Bay, so I got to watch a good chunk of that. But outside of that, it's not like I've dug into a ton of this matchup. So I'm just going to tell you, one, enjoy these, right? These are the two of the last three games we have this season. And I'm personally going in this one. I'm cheering for the Bills and the Commanders that I think like 99% of America are cheering for. I believe my picks for this one are going to be the Bills and the Eagles. I think we're going to get a Buffalo and Philadelphia Super Bowl is my guess. It could easily be KC. I think the least likely one here is probably something that involves the Commanders. I do think Philly wins, but anything's possible. I mean, let's see. Let's try to rank these really quick. I haven't thought about this. I'm thinking out loud as we go through this. So we've got Chiefs, Commanders, Bills, Commanders, Bills, Eagles, and Bills, Commanders. So Chiefs, Commanders, Bills, Commanders, Chiefs, Eagles, and Bills, Eagles. Those are our four potential options for Super Bowl, right? let's just go what would be the best. I think the best Super Bowl would be Bills-Eagles. I think that's the best matchup. I think you kind of get a team that you're cheering for in Buffalo, a team that maybe, at least from a Packers standpoint, you're probably cheering against in the Eagles, and they've won recently. So I think that you get a really good matchup there, and I think both teams are fantastic. Eagles-Chiefs definitely is a very talented Super Bowl and two really talented teams. I'm not sure you have as much of a team to cheer for, but that's still a very good Super Bowl. Buffalo-Washington would be interesting. You have a Washington team that nobody expected to be there with a rookie quarterback versus this Buffalo team that's done everything they can to finally get there. They should be like the underdogs, right? The Bills are kind of that underdog story. They finally made it there, but it would actually be Washington that would be that underdog in that scenario. So that would sort of be an interesting juxtaposition. And then KC versus Washington would be a really fun one in the effect of you have a clear face and a clear heel. You have this Washington upstart, up and coming, you know, Jaden Daniels. Could they shock the world versus, you know, Patrick Mahomes and KC going for a three-peat? I mean, you have the ultimate, everyone's cheering against the Chiefs. Everyone's cheering for the Commanders. Two teams on totally different wavelengths, complete underdog, complete dynasty going against each other. That would be a ton of fun as well. Not a really awful matchup either way. I do think Eagles-Chiefs would be maybe the least intriguing, but you do probably get, you know, two really good teams and certainly some history there as well. So you're going to get a good matchup either way. Again, I'm cheering for Bills Commanders, but I'm going to say Bills and Eagles in this one. Speaking of the Bills and speaking of Rasul Douglas, if you're interested in watching Rasul Douglas, especially after today's episode, keep an extra eye on him. You know, it's a good opportunity, especially if maybe the game is a little bit out of hand or whatever it might be. Keep an eye on number 31 for Buffalo, and you'll get your own personal viewing experience of Rasul Douglas to see if you think he's playing well, not playing well, and how he would potentially fit in Green Bay. Because as you know, he is an unrestricted free agent coming up this offseason, and that's why we're having this conversation that we're about to have right here and right now. Now, before we get to whether or not Rasul Douglas could make sense as a member of the Green Bay Packers this upcoming offseason, I want to go back to that Rasul Douglas trade and just sort of recap that really quick. If you remember, it was the beginning of 2023, right at the trade deadline, the Green Bay Packers traded Rasul Douglas and a fifth round pick for a third round pick. So basically what it amounted to was the Packers moving up 70 spots in the draft by giving up Rasul Douglas. That was the ultimate trade. What you also need to know is that Green Bay did have some cap savings over the last two seasons by also trading away Rasul Douglas. They got about $8 million in salary cap space over the last two seasons. So they did recoup some money from that. And then you also, again, got some increased draft compensation. And that's what the ultimate takeaway was from that deal. Now, if they kept Rasul, you know, I think you probably don't bring back like a Corey Ballantyne in that situation. You probably don't need it quite as much, although they're definitely a little bit different. You know, Ballantyne's a little bit more special teams guy and so on and so forth. I don't think keeping Rasul would have really affected Xavier McKinney or Josh Jacobs. I think they would have still gone after those guys, but Green Bay would have a little less money to spend in this free agency because they would have spent some of that, not have, you know, had as much carryover and those sort of things if they had kept Rasul. So they do have some extra salary cap space because they moved on from Rasul. And then again, they did, you know, move up and were able to get Tyron Hopper in that deal as well. Now, with the benefit of hindsight right now, you might look at it, and I know a lot of people look at it and say, Tyron Hopper one season in did absolutely nothing. Imagine what Rasul Douglas could have done for Green Bay over the past two seasons. And listen, with the benefit of hindsight, you can certainly look at it that way, and I understand the argument. And I know a lot of people did not like it at the time. What you have to remember about that deal is the Packers were 2-5 at the time. They had just lost 4 in a row, and they looked, quite frankly, bad. I mean, they looked really bad. They were losing to teams that they should not have lost to. You had no idea yet at that point if Jordan Love was even going to be a franchise quarterback. Like, it was, you were in no man's land. All right, you were in no man's land. And you had this corner who was on a 2-year deal, was one of the one true ways that they could actually save some money and move up in the draft. And they may need that draft compensation if they're going to have to sort of start this thing over and start searching for quarterbacks again. Goody just didn't know at that point in time because we had not seen enough from Jordan. Again, they had just lost 4 in a row and were 2-5 in the season. And here's what you have to look at from a Rasul standpoint at that point in time. Rasul had a 2-year contract left. 2023 and 2024. And as much as maybe Goody would not have wanted to admit it at the time, at that point, 2023 was a sunk cost. Like you were 2-5, 0-4 in your last four games and looked like they were going nowhere. The opportunity at a playoff appearance seemed like a pipe dream. Now they got there and they played great against Dallas and almost beat San Francisco. And maybe if you have a Rasul Douglas against San Francisco, maybe you win that game. Do I think that there was probably a world in which Green Bay was going to win that Super Bowl? No, probably not. And at the time when you were making that trade, it certainly didn't feel that way, which leaves you with just one Rasul Douglas season left under contract where you're paying him a decent amount of money. And again, it didn't look quite like your Super Bowl window was going to be open yet in 2024. And what we know pretty much now is that that kind of is true. Again, I don't think Rasul Douglas would have been the difference in 2023. Maybe he would have been. I doubt it. I don't think that gets you past San Fran and then Detroit and then KC. I don't think Green Bay's going on that three-game win streak just because they have Rasul Douglas on the roster. Could I be wrong? Sure. But I don't see that as the case. And they clearly, again, Rasul Douglas was not getting them over the hump in 2024. That was not the missing piece in 2024, especially, we'll talk about this in just a moment, especially the way that Rasul Douglas played in 2024. So I know that people look at this as some like unbelievable bad Goody trade. At the time, it actually did make sense. I think even looking back at it now, I don't think it changes anything. I don't think Green Bay has a Super Bowl ring right now because they kept Rasul Douglas. He would have been an unrestricted free agent going into the offseason. You moved up 60 spots in the draft and saved about $7, $8 million, somewhere in that range, $6 or $7 million. That's fine. Again, if he wasn't going to be the difference maker, if your window wasn't officially open at that point, then gain that extra draft capital, save some money, use it elsewhere, which they kind of did on Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. I don't think that this is just some albatross that's hanging around Brian Gutekunst and be like, how could he have possibly done this? It was fine. Maybe not ideal in hindsight. Maybe even then, I don't think that I would lose any sleep over making that deal. And now it's just up to Tyron Hopper to pay that off in some capacity. But to me, that's less to do about Tyron Hopper and the trade that you made. That your draft evaluation might be wrong on Tyron Hopper, but getting a top 100 pick in that scenario, usually a pretty good thing. We'll just have to see if Tyron Hopper can pay that off in some way, shape, or form. The reason I bring that trade up is because on the surface, it looks like Green Bay made that trade because they wanted to save some money. They were 2-5 and they could pick up an additional high draft pick or at least move up 70 spots in the draft, right? That's what it seems like. That's what it feels like. That's what it looks like. That's all we know at this point in time. What we do not know is, was there some sort of falling out between Rasul Douglas and the Packers where maybe Matt LaFleur was talking to Goody and saying, hey, we got to find a new home for this guy. He's not a fit in our locker room. I do not believe that that is the case. Just to be abundantly clear, I have not heard those whispers. I have not seen anything substantial about that. I'm not even putting that out there in the ether to just as like a point of conjecture. I've not seen anything about that whatsoever. But I'm just saying sometimes when there's a trade like that, sometimes there have been things that are going on. My guess is probably not, but that's one thing that we don't know is if Green Bay specifically wanted to move on from Rasul Douglas. And if that's the case, of course, this is just an entire non-starter and he's not going to be back in Green Bay. But we will continue based on what we know right now, which is nothing, and that everything's peachy keen, meaning Rasul and the organization are great, that the organization of the Packers would welcome him back with open arms, and that Rasul would be more than willing to come back to Green Bay. We don't know any different, so we're going to go forward assuming that that will be the case. Now, as far as why this deal would make sense from Green Bay, well, we know that they need cornerback depth and competition. Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon are your outside corners right now. Javon Bullard's in the slot. You have Kamal Haddon, Kalen King, Isaiah Dunn, Caleb Hayes. Those are your other players in the room. Of course, again, Javon Bullard is that hybrid player who's playing some in the slot, but that's it. You have Jaire Alexander, but I'm expecting Jaire Alexander to be gone. If he's not gone, that probably just ends the Rasul Douglas conversation. I don't think you're bringing back Jaire and going out to get Rasul. If you bring back Jaire, you're probably looking towards the draft. If you move on from Jaire, you're probably bringing in a free agent and looking towards the draft. So I think that's probably the conversation here is if Jaire is back in 2025, it's another non-starter for Rasul Douglas, would be my guess. I think you're probably looking at the draft in that scenario. So we're going to assume that Jaire is gone. Again, you have Valentine and Nixon on the outside with Bullard in the slot and then no other corners to write home about. So you need some depth. You need some competition. You would love a challenge for Nixon. You'd love a challenge for Carrington Valentine on the outside. And you would think that Rasul Douglas would certainly do that, both providing depth and providing a starting caliber challenge for both of those players. After all the holiday hustle and bustle and spending on about 100 things that you didn't expect to spend money on, the start of the new year can feel like a hangover for your credit. And with the holidays over, it's time to start setting those credit goals for 2025, and it's time to start using Kickoff. Now, my experience personally with Kickoff has been incredible. I found Kickoff online, and I immediately started seeing positive changes in my credit. It was so easy to get set up and get started, and I was immediately impressed by how seamless the entire process was. Now, Kickoff is a credit line that's just set up distinctly for credit building. It's super simple. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows fast. And if your credit's under 600, you could jump like 28 points in your first month. And the best part is that you can start building credit immediately for only $1 for your first month. And when you sign up, you'll quickly find out, like I did, why Kickoff is the number one credit building app with over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So shake off your credit hangover and look forward to better credit with Kickoff. Get your first month for just a dollar at getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's 80% off Kickoff. Without the C, get kickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new customers first month only. Subject to approval, offer subject to change. Terms and conditions may apply. Point stat based on Equifax Vantage Score 3.0 changes for Kickoff users starting under 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Individual results may vary. So you get the competition, you get the depth. You get familiarity, right? You're familiar with Rasul. He's been in that locker room before. A lot of new faces. It's not all the same guy. But I mean, he was just here in 2023. All right? It's not a super long time ago. So Rasul Douglas was just there. You have that familiarity. And the other thing too is he's not going to completely break the bank. We're not talking about some 25 million top of the line corner. We'll talk about what he might be demanding in just a moment, but you're going to be able to afford him. He's not going to be this upper echelon, huge free agent contract signing. He's going to be somebody that's not going to break the bank and is still going to give you some money to go shopping for an offensive lineman or a pass rusher or a wide receiver, or maybe some combination of those players as well. So it could make sense from a Green Bay standpoint. From a Rasul Douglas standpoint, why would it make sense? It would make sense only if Green Bay is giving him the highest contract. I can guarantee you that's what Rasul is going to be looking for. If the Bears, they don't need a corner. So I don't know, maybe the Vikings, right? They're potentially going to need some corners this offseason. If the Vikings come calling and say, we're going to give you 4 years, you know, 52 million or something crazy, whatever, or 4 years, 60 million, and that's his highest offer, he's just going to go to the Vikings. You know, like, he's going to go to where he can get the best deal. If Green Bay calls and offers him the best deal, then he's probably going to go there. So that's why it would make sense for Rasul if Green Bay came calling and gave him the best possible contract. But there are some other things. They are a playoff contender if Rasul is looking for something like that. He has familiarity in Green Bay. He's been in that locker room. And he should theoretically be a very good fit for Jeff Hafley's defense. So there's some reasons it makes sense for Green Bay. And there's certainly some reasons that it would make sense for Rasul Douglas if Green Bay is willing to pony up and make him, you know, one of the better offers that's out there, or the best offer that's out there on the market. As far as a contract standpoint goes, PFF actually has Rasul Douglas as their 15th best available free agent as of right now, not including any cuts that are coming or not including any free agents that get re-signed. But as of right now, just players that are set to become unrestricted free agents, Rasul Douglas is number 15 on their list. Their estimated contract for Rasul is 2 years, $26.5 million with $15.25 million guaranteed. So just a little over $13 million a year for two seasons. It's a pretty hefty contract for Rasul, if I'm being honest. I think that's probably a little hefty, but I'm not saying that he couldn't get it. I think it's within realm of possibility that he could get that type of deal. If I had to guess the over-under on where his contract comes, I'm going under for that contract, but it wouldn't surprise me if he got something right around there. Now, all right, let's look at the scouting report for Rasul Douglas. I went back and watched a bunch of tape on him. We'll go through his box score. We'll go through, you know, the PFF stuff. We'll go through all of it so you can kind of get a better feel for who Rasul Douglas is going into 2025. This past season, he played in 15 games. He started in 15 games, racked up 58 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 0 interceptions, 5 pass breakups, and 1 forced fumble. So no picks, no sacks, 1 forced fumble, 5 pass breakups. Those were the positive stats, tackles or tackles, whatever. But overall, nothing super sexy there, nothing super compelling, just a normal basic stat line. In his 2 playoff games, he has 2 playoff games played, 2 playoff games started, 9 tackles, no pass breakups, no nothing else. Per PFF, he has been thrown at 57 times, allowing 42 receptions, a 73.7% completion percentage for 509 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. They have him charted as only 3 pass breakups. He has 10 penalties on the season and has allowed a passer rating of 118.2. So let's just say not great. He has a 55.6 PFF grade. That's way down from his 81.0 in 2023. In his time in Green Bay, he had a 71.1 and a 74.5. So this is very low. It's his lowest since 2019 when he was in Philly and the second lowest PFF grade of his entire career. They gave him a 59.9 run defense grade, a 70.2 tackling grade, a 52.3 pass rush grade, and a 54.7 coverage grade. This past week against Baltimore, he had a 39.1 grade and has only one grade above 60, which is their break-even, their Mendoza line, their average grade, right? Only one grade above 60 in his last 8 games, and even that one was only a 64.0. He is ranked 95th out of 118 eligible corners in 2024 based off of PFF's grades. 95th out of 118. Spoiler, that's not exactly great. That's in the very bottom tier of corners per PFF. From a scouting report standpoint, what I saw on tape, I should first mention I didn't see this on tape, but I do know it to be true. He will be 30 years old this year. So before the season starts, he will turn 30 years old. So that's the number you don't want to see, right? Like that's the big evil number in the NFL now. Maybe not at quarterback so much, but or kicker maybe, but you see 30 and it especially at skill positions or corner, like things like that, and it gets a little freaky. So he is going to turn 30 this upcoming season. I did see some, you know, plenty of positives on tape. He still has that vet savvy, little nuances, little tricks of the trade, little, you know, tugs of the jersey that, you know, he knows how to get away with. Little ability to kind of sell a quarterback on what he's going to do when he's actually doing something else, understanding route concepts and design so he knows when to go and when to kind of jump certain things. He just has that veteran ability, that vet savvy. He's seen everything. He knows everything. He studies his tape, and he's going to be well prepared going into a game, and he's definitely going to bring, like I said, that vet savvy to the table. He's a very willing tackler. All right, we're going to talk about tackling more in just a moment, but he's a very willing tackler. He can play the left side or the right side. He's very assignment sure. He still plays with a level of physicality. And like I said, it does feel like he would be a fit in Jeff Hafley's defense. So there's some positives that are definitely there. From a tackling standpoint, it was the most Jekyll and Hyde tape that I have ever seen on any category for any player ever. I could play you a breakdown of like 20 plays that he made in the run game that you would think that he was maybe the best run-stopping corner in the NFL. I could play you another 20 run plays or plays where he's coming up to make a tackle on a wide receiver or in the open field, whatever, that honestly makes it look like he would be just like the worst tackler and worst run defending slash tackling corner in the NFL. And there was like no in between. It was like he's coming up usually aggressively, and a lot of times he's coming up making a big impact tackle, playing physical. It's like, oh my God, that is literally like teaching tape. And other times his feet get stuck in mud and he's letting players run completely by him. His run fits weren't, you know, what they were supposed to be. He's missing tackles. Like it's all over the damn place. I don't know what to make of it. Like I said, it's an A or an F. You don't know what you're going to get. It's crazy. Like literally teaching tape, tackling stuff, physical, aggressive, coming up and making plays, looking awesome, and then looking completely lost on the next play. Like he's seen somebody run the football for the first time and doesn't know how to handle it. It's the weirdest thing. It was, like I said, some of the most Jekyll and Hyde tape that I've seen from any player, college or pros. It just, again, some really great stuff. I mean, really great stuff and some really awful stuff. And I mean, some really awful stuff. So take that for what it's worth. Inconsistency is probably what it is, and that ends up being a negative, right? From a negative standpoint, he will still gamble and he will still take the bait. Remember that Detroit Lions game, right? I don't know if you guys remember this, but Detroit in a game the year prior ran a concept, and Rasul had done his homework and knew the exact concept that was coming and jumped it and broke up a pass. I don't remember if he intercepted it or broke it up, but he definitely made a play on the ball. And Detroit, and I'm assuming probably Ben Johnson had something to do with this, as much as it pains me to say that, Detroit saw that on tape and are like, huh, he knows what we do when we run this play. So they save that. Next year comes back. They go to the same formation. They go to the same concept. And They run the same play with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Amon-Ra St. Brown runs a little bit of a hook coming back to the ball. And Rasul Douglas has seen this. He's seen the formation. He's seen the route. He's jumped it before. He's broken it up before. He knows exactly what to do. So Amon-Ra St. Brown comes up, or he runs his route, comes back on the hitch, and Rasul Douglas knows exactly what's coming. He jumps it. And just as he starts to jump, Amon-Ra St. Brown spins out, goes up, and it's a wide open touchdown. So Rasul does his tape study, but sometimes because he thinks he knows what's coming, he's a little bit susceptible. Now, it's a great play by Detroit. Great play by Detroit. But you will see him gamble, take a chance at something, and maybe leave a receiver open, or maybe be susceptible to an out and up or a pump fake or those sort of things. You can beat him with that from time to time. I'm going to say this, and I never want to, get too far into the weeds with this. It does feel like he lost a little bit of a step. I'm not saying something drastic, but he didn't look quite as spry to me this past season than, from what I remember him in Green Bay. And if you go back and watch it, I have this. Here it is. So it felt like his short speed wasn't good enough. It felt like his closing speed wasn't good enough. And it felt like his deep speed wasn't good enough. Now, Rasul is never a burner, right? He never won with speed. He won with technique. He won with press. He won with being physical, kind of getting away with some of those vet savvy holds here and there. That's how he won. So this isn't super shocking, but it does feel like maybe a quarter of a step even, which may not sound like a bunch, but in the NFL, it is a lot of times everything. It did feel like he lost a little bit of that step and just didn't have the same explosiveness that we saw in Green Bay. And again, he wasn't already the most explosive player, but I felt like he was more explosive in Green Bay than what I saw on tape this past season. Footwork is inconsistent. As I mentioned earlier, we'll get stuck in mud, both in coverage and in space. He is an outside corner only, so he's not going to give you anything in the slot. He's not going to give you anything at safety. He is truly a left corner or right corner. Pick your side, but that's who he is. The technique doesn't look quite as consistent. The hands were a little bit all over the place. He was getting opened up too much, which was leaving him susceptible to, just kind of moves to the inside. Some slants where he was getting, opened up wide, and then they would cross his body and be wide open. So if you're not going to be the most twitchy, explosive player in the world, you better be really good at your technique. And I didn't see that same level of consistency with Rasul's technique this past year's. Penalty issues were a major problem. 10 penalties per PFF this past year. And I noted it on my notes before I even looked at how many he had. It was flag after flag after flag after flag. It was very abundantly clear. And there were other ones too where they did not get penalized, but he easily could have been penalized on the play. And that it all makes sense and it all comes together, right? He's not the most explosive player. He's lost maybe even if it's like an eighth of a step, that's going to hurt him even more. His technique is starting to wane a little bit. And what's going to happen when a receiver gets past you, or you're trying to hold on for dear life and stay close to him? You're going to get grabby. You're going to try to out physical them. And that's going to come with a lot of flags. And it certainly did this past season. Doesn't feel or look quite like the same player. He's coming off a really, really tough season in Buffalo. We kind of ID'd that with the PFF grades from this past year. And at $13 million a year, you are like, if that is what it ends up being, if it's anywhere, 2 years, $26 million, something like that, you are paying for really good Rasul Douglas when he is coming off a really rough season, maybe worst Rasul Douglas, right? So if you go back to 2023, some really good tapes, some really good football, and his time in Green Bay was really good. If you can refine that player, listen, I'm all for it. I think you would make a really good fit. This is another one of those players where when I went into this, I'm like, I think this could be a really good idea to go get Rasul back and fit him in this defense. He seems like a perfect fit. You go back and watch him on tape this past year, and it is not ideal. It is not what you want to see. You can watch it for yourself today as the Bills take on the Chiefs. Watch 31. Now, of course, he'll go out and have like a 3-interception all return for touchdown day. And that'll be just to make me look stupid or whatever. But he just has not been the same player this past year. And if you're going to pay him a major contract, you better get a major return on that investment. And you're just gambling at this point that you're going to see previous years Rasul Douglas out there and not the 2024 version that did not play up to expectations. On the surface, it feels like it could make some sense. I do think that number would have to go down significantly in order for Green Bay to be interested, to the point where it's just too good of a value to pass up. And I don't really think it's going to get to that point. I think Buffalo would just bring him back, prior to it getting to that point. I don't, again, know if there was anything to his exit in Green Bay, if there were any issues there. I don't think that there were, but that's, worth, there's at least something that we don't know. Is Rasul upset that the Packers traded him away? If he's upset about that, he may not be willing to come back to Green Bay. That could be a factor here as well. And he's a non-elite athlete whose technical ability is starting to fail him a little bit, who's losing a step and is, again, now getting to that age 30. My verdict here, I think there's a very slight chance, but I'd be pretty surprised, and I think it's very unlikely. It's not a move that I would personally make unless you get him for an absolute bargain. I'm talking 1 year, you know, $4 to $5 million in that range with minimal guarantees. Like if something like that comes along, you're like, hell yeah, we'll bring him in. We'll hope we can get him back to form from when he was in Green Bay. Like I would absolutely do that. But anything in that 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 million range for a 1 to 2 year deal, hell no. Now I would be totally disinterested at that point. To me, it would definitely be a no. We'll see. Again, I like the idea. I know some people are definitely enamored with Rasul coming back. Again, watch him on Sunday. Let's see what he does this week. But his play has not been great. Go watch the tape against Baltimore this past week. It was a little bit rough as well. And I just don't see him playing at that level anymore. And when you, again, are not an elite athlete to begin with, any little drop in speed, any little drop in technique is really going to cost you. This past year, it really, really cost Rasul Douglas. So again, final verdict, very slight chance. I wouldn't do it. I don't think the Packers do it, but it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I always appreciate you a ton. Special shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Ritaka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Step Keat, Love and Football, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Allison Tuckwab, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, and Ian Ewing. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.